we also run the risk, and I've had this conversation several times with our customer base, and they scratch their head and say, aren't you really cannibalizing your own programs by reducing the volume that we're sending to you? But that's where we move from vendor to partner. Changes the relationship in that regard.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP. And with me on the show today, I have my special guest, Gordon. Gordon, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Gordon Smith. I'm the president and CEO of Sagent.
And for people who are unaware, Gordon, Sagent is what?
We're a service provider to network operators. Those include telecom carriers, cable MSOs, and private networks or enterprise customers of ours. And by a service provider, we do a few different things for our customer base. We have an equipment line of business where we sell them refurbished assets. We have a test and repair line of business where we repair their technology for them and get it back to them for use in the network. We provide third-party maintenance services, remote engineering support, and delivery of products to site. And then we have a field service business, which is largely focused on decommissioning of network assets.
Okay, superb. And why is this kind of business important, do you think? I mean, what is it about your business that you think differentiates it from other businesses?
It's important both environmentally and economically to have a third-party element to the supply chain. And I can probably go into those separately, the economic benefit to follow, but the environmental benefit is something that's emerged in the last number of years. And we're very much focused on our ESG strategies, our environmental, social, and governance strategy. The environmental aspect of it, this is somewhat by positional luck or good luck, and some of it by good planning and execution. But when you think about what we do in the secondary market, provision of equipment, what we do is we take assets out of networks that are no longer have a useful purpose within that one operator's network. We refurbish them and we remarket those assets. And you think, well, that's fine.
Let me jump in there, Gordon. Why sure. would they no longer have a useful life in that operator's market?
Technology migration. You know, as we move from 2G to 3G to 4G to 5G in the wireless space and the cable network space, they're moving from DOCSIS 3.0 to DOCSIS 3.1. In the IT space, there's constant upgrades. We're on Gen 10 servers, and not too long ago, we were on Gen 7 servers. So what happens is there's this arbitrage that happens in the market whereby what is no longer needed from a tier one carrier may well be needed by a tier two, may be needed offshore. So we can extend the life of that product. And in doing so, there's the opportunity to lower the amount of manufacturing, reduce the amount of even mining, the production of highly refined glass, extruding plastics, rare earth elements, which it's a market controlled 85% by China. And that's not a political statement. That's just creates a vulnerability in supply chain. So if there's less everything from mining to the manufacturing, to the transportation, the introduction of new technologies, the use of those technologies, and then the ultimate disposition of those technologies. If we keep those assets working in the economy, there's less of everything, less raw materials, less emissions. The emissions calculations are a little bit challenging for us at times, sure. in that there's not a standard for every element of the process. Some of them we can calculate very accurately. Emissions from transportation seems to be something that we can dial in on. Emissions from mining, emissions from various manufacturing of different metals versus plastics versus glass, those can be a little harder to quantify. But just by nature of what we do, keeping assets in the working operators' networks longer, we're making those positive contributions to the circular economy, unlike the linear economy where things get built, deployed, used, and disposed of and end up in an e-waste stream, we're actually diverting assets from e-waste streams on a daily basis.
And what does the refurbishment consist of typically?
You know, we're on the infrastructure side of the business. We do very little with consumer devices. So the refurbishment is usually a functional refurbishment whereby the product has to operate correctly once redeployed. And that's through full functional testing, repair as necessary. We don't really use cosmetic refurbishing as a requirement. If you're going to resell a handset or a set-top box, which we do, but it's not a major part of our business, there's usually a 6-foot test or a 3-foot test. If you can't see a scratch from 3 feet, it doesn't exist. That's really a consumer device status or metric. In the infrastructure space, you know, whether it's AT&T or Verizon or Vodafone or Orange, it doesn't really matter whether there's a scratched fin on the heatsink of a radio. It's not important to the functionality. No one's going to see it. So the refurbishment tends to be a functional refurbishment, a tested refurbishment, a repair is necessary, but cosmetics are not important in our business.
Okay, superb. And you mentioned data analytics capabilities. How does that work?
You know, about 5 years ago now, we realized that the visualization of data we collect is becoming increasingly important. If you receive a SQL database or a thousand or a million cell Excel file or whatever CSV file, flat file, it's really tough to determine what the trends are associated with what's going on in a carrier's network. So we developed a data analytics platform, which we brand as Sagent Insights, whereby we use that as a communication method to our customers to provide them actionable data, things they can really use, places they can see trends. And we've got a couple of good examples I can give you of how powerful it can be.
Super.
During our test and repair process, we collect on average 50 to 60 data points during the repair process. Everything from the time it hits our dock through our lab, what components were changed, what tests were run, what signal is weak, whether a filter failed or whether a power supply failed and what we replaced. And so it's a tremendous amount of data we're collecting on a single repair. You know, a single repair might be $300, but we've got these 60 data points. We have all the information. How can we provide that back to our customers in a meaningful way? So what we started to do was collect that data, start looking for trends in the data. And what we found, interestingly, once you have the platform in order to present the information, we found that 30% on average of all repairs that flow through our facility are what we classify as voidable. And that could be something as simple as a no trouble found. It was operating in the field, but the technician might have thought, well, something's wrong, so I'm going to replace this part. Okay, that's kind of an easy one. There's other avoidable repairs, like there's a software corrupted. Well, the technician on site could have reflashed the software, would have fixed the issue. It didn't need to be pulled from the network. It could be a configuration issue where the technician, I'm picking on technicians, and I'll get off that in a second, because they're very competent in dealing with tremendous amounts of technology, which is, these are brilliant guys, but they can't be expert in every single thing within a network. But it could be a configuration issue. And when you're configuring, whether it's a radio or whether it's a Cisco router or switch, there's steps to be followed. And if you are supposed to follow steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you do 1, 2, 3, 5, 4, that's what we call bricking the unit or making it unusable, and it has to come in from repair. So that could lend itself to a training issue. We've been able to identify manufacturing defects, changes in the manufacturing process. And again, I'm not picking on technicians or the manufacturers, but when you have the data, it tells you the story. So when we came up with the analysis, and this is carrier over carrier, that we can avoid 30% of all repairs, we only account for in a repair lab 10% of the outage in terms of cost. Our average repair might be $300, $350 on a $20,000 unit. But where the cost comes in is you might have to roll a truck to site. You might have to climb a tower. You've got freight. You've got logistics. All of those costs end up being, you know, an average of in U.S. dollars, $3,500 per outage, not including any customer impact or dissatisfaction from your customer base. We're charging $350 of a $3,500 outage, we're only costing 10% of the total. If we can save them 30% of their outages, we're actually saving our customers $3 for every dollar we're charging them. that becomes pretty powerful. And we couldn't do that without a very robust data analytics tool. We brand it Sagent Insights because we actually give them true insights into their network. You know, our cause is know what your network knows, and that's really what we're trying to help our customers do. Another example would be what we provide on the environmental side. We've got large asset disposition contracts with a number of mainly domestic in the United States suppliers. We do have a couple international as well, where we're pulling assets from their network and we're remarketing those assets on their behalf. And when we do that, we can give them very accurate data as to how many pounds, how many millions of pounds of e-waste were diverted from waste streams because we put it back into the economy. And this becomes important. It's one thing, you know, most major companies, public or private, have sustainability groups and they want accurate data on the sustainability of the organization. We can provide that back to them in a very tangible way. We know what every product we handle, we know not just what the weight is, but what the composition is. We know if it's 80% steel and 10% copper and, you know, 3% fiber optics, we can tell them exactly by pound what they've diverted from the waste stream, which is important for their reporting and their social positioning within the economy. So they get to report to their consumer base, and with the Greenfin or the financial investments that are being made now, the environmental consciousness of investors is very prevalent at this moment, so they can report back exactly what they're doing. So those are just a couple of examples of how the data analytics plays to the commercial benefit, where they're reducing their outages, they're reducing their costs, and also making positive contributions to the circular economy. They all work together, the data analytics and the environmental strategy.
And they're all part of this Sagent Insights package that you talk about.
Yes, they really are. We can do other things with the analytics as well. For example, we move, you know, millions of assets per year back into networks. We can provide our customers with spot market information where we can tell them exactly this product was worth, you know, if you were to resell it today, it would be worth, you know, $600. If you sell it next month, it's going to be $400. We can watch those trends. We can provide those insights to them where they can say, well, I was just going to retire this product in place. I'm already paying for the real estate, so why do I want to move it? Well, your return on that asset is going to diminish over time. Or in this crazy world where we've got chip shortages, you know, people need semiconductors, microprocessors, ICs, and manufacturers can't get that product to the market. Sometimes it's not a depreciating market. Sometimes it's actually appreciating, where used product can actually be more benefit several months down the line. And we can see where that market crunch is coming just based on trends.
Fascinating. Interesting. Wow. We're seeing now the whole shift to 5G. Is that impacting telcos and their retirement of older equipment?
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today. Influence the future.
It definitely is. And, you know, from our perspective, as long as there's technology change, we'll always have a place in the market. The reality of 5G is it's where most of the investment's going, but in terms of carrying customer traffic, it will be 2025. Projections are before the majority of traffic in developed countries is actually traveling across 5G networks. So 4G is still, you know, the backbone of most of the traffic. 3G is still remarkably important to carriers' networks, even though the introduction was going on, you know, 18 years ago for 3G, and 2G really came out in 1994 with GSM or CDMA. And we're even working still on some old CDMA networks that were deployed in 1994, 1995. And the reason is they're functional, they serve a purpose, they're not necessarily carrying consumer traffic, but they're carrying machine-to-machine traffic, and they're fully, you know, amortized. They're not costing the carrier anything. They're not investing in technology, and they work. So 5G is important. It's probably the most important wireless technology right now. But 4G has a major place in the market, as do 2 and 3 to a lesser extent. Supporting those legacy networks or current technologies, I would refer to it, is extremely important because you can't just snap your fingers and move everyone to 5G. It's a migration over the course of time, and handsets are designed to handle that. They can ride on 3G, 4G, 5G. And for a long period of time, if you're in a dense urban area, there's a likelihood that you'll be on 5G now or very soon. But when you start traveling, you know, to the suburbs or to rural areas, you're going to find that, wow, that just, my phone said 5G, now it says LTE, which is the 4G technology, or it might say UMTS, which is the 3G technology. So you'll see your phones moving around from network to network, and they're all important to keep the service in place.
Okay, and you mentioned selling some of this equipment offshore. So I assume what that means is you're taking equipment from the local carriers, you're based out of Texas, and maybe selling that to a carrier that's, you know, up and coming in a developing country, or is that how you operate?
Yeah, there's a natural progression of markets, and you might look at Europe and some of the more developed countries in Asia and the North American market as being always fairly close to each other. Within those markets, there's often what we call tier two carriers, tier three carriers. There's fewer of them now that there's been so much aggregation throughout the world. You know, in the United States, we have three carriers now. In most countries, you have three, sometimes four. Officially, we probably have four, but the fourth one may never take hold. But beneath which, there's usually a tier of smaller carriers which are handling regional operations, and they don't have the capital or the, whether it's financial wherewithal or the business need to move as quickly toward 5G technology or DOCSIS 3.1 technology. So when a tier one carrier in a major market decides to dispose of their assets that are no longer needed in the network, those are the ones we'll refurbish and often sell offshore. And that country, we sell a lot into Latin America, who are, depending on the technology, maybe 2 years behind North America. In that case, you know, they might very much need to be augmenting their 4G network, and it's an existing network, but they want to grow it. And why would you pay, you know, leading edge prices for something that's not leading edge? You might as well use all this capacity that's built up from decommissioned assets. So we do a lot of sales into Latin America, Central America, the Andean region, in particular the Caribbean, which tends to be a little bit further behind the rest of Latin America. We sell on six continents, albeit a lot of the product sales now go, 40% of them probably go to Latin America, probably 40% domestically, and 20% to Asia, Europe, and Africa.
Okay, so you're selling them essentially secondhand equipment. They don't need to then buy new equipment, so you're saving on, as you mentioned earlier, the manufacturing and mining and everything to create that new equipment. And you have refurbished it, obviously, so it's nearly new, I guess, going into these markets.
Yeah.
And we're saving emissions and manufacturing. That's really impressive.
Yeah. And you think even back to the example I gave on saving 30% of the repair events or outage events within the network, even that's reducing the need for manufacturing, because what happens when a carrier has a high rate of failures within their network, they're having to hold more stock. They have to hold spares because they can't just take something out of the network. They take something out and they have to put it back in within a certain time frame. Often it's 5 minutes, sometimes it's an hour, but they need that spares pool. So even the spares pool gets reduced by better data analytics and better processes. And we can point our customers to very tangible examples. You know, I talked about the technician training issue. We've had evidence that within this with a major carrier within the United States, we could show them that you have a training issue in the New York area. And despite the fact that New Yorkers can sometimes have strong opinions and told us we don't have a damn training issue, we were able to show them that, yes, this is the repeat failure. We could even show them what technicians were having the challenge, and we can provide them configurations and installation procedures. We can actually have classes with them, bring them up to speed more on the technologies that they've been handed within that region. We weren't seeing the same outages or the same avoidable repair rates in other parts of the country. Similarly, you know, we've ended up with the identification within a certain region where there was corrupted software that was issued to the technicians incorrectly by the manufacturer. It was a bug fix, which wasn't working, and they were applying it, and it was causing on a regular basis outages. And that's no fault of the technician. They use the software that they've been issued. We're able to zero in exactly on what's happening within a market, even right down to a technician. Often it's not the technician, it's the region. And it could be a training issue, it could be a software issue. It could be, in some cases, a manufacturing issue. But because you have the data, we make it visible, actionable, then we can sit down with the operations group and say, hey, this is what we're seeing. This is what's going on. And the data tells the story. We're not the bad guys. We can be perceived as that sometimes. But, here's the data. Tell us if we're doing something wrong, because this is what we're seeing. Let's make the operational changes. We also run the risk. And I've had this conversation several times with our customer base, and they scratch their head and say, aren't you really cannibalizing your own programs by reducing the volume that we're sending to you? But that's where we move from vendor to partner. Changes the relationship in that regard.
Okay. And obviously, you're not giving away the data analytics solution free. It's something that they, I assume, subscribe to on a monthly basis or an annual basis or something like that. It's kind of an additional service that you offer.
It comes down to how the program is sold. If we have a multi-year contract or test and repair or third-party maintenance, we will bundle in the data analytics with that typically. So it's on a subscription basis, but often, you know, if we have a volume commitment from our customers, we don't upcharge for the service. And the reason in part is, A, we want to be a better partner, but secondly, we're collecting and presenting all that data internally for our own purpose. There's not an additional fee to go the extra mile for the customer often just because we have it. We need it to be a better operation ourselves. So providing it back to the customer isn't, there's no COGS element to it that way.
Okay. There's a movement towards predictive maintenance in every kind of maintenance field. Is this something that you guys are seeing as well?
We are, and we get to that through the trend analysis as to an analysis of mean time to failure is the metric we use. We don't proactively monitor networks within our operation. There are companies that do that. Some manufacturers do it, some with great success, some with limited success. But because we're very focused on the cable networks and the edge devices in that space and the wireless networks, the radio heads, we're not actually monitoring those networks for them. Now, we can give them all sorts of data about, you know, this is the mean time to failure for this unit. And within that, anything manufactured between certain dates was manufactured in a different manner, used a different capacitor, used a different diode. We recommend that those come out of network sooner, and we can provide you what we call a signature repair, that if anything fails in that radio, in that modem, you know, in that server, we're going to not just repair the failure, we're going to make what we call a signature repair. Everyone that comes in, we're also going to repair this known common defect.
Right.
So we can provide them that data. I'd stop short of saying that we're doing predictive failures because we're actually not monitoring the network. We can show them all the trends associated with what's failing and why.
Interesting. Okay. Gordon, we're coming towards the end of the podcast now. Is there anything I haven't asked that you wish I had, or any topics we've not mentioned that you think it's important for people to be aware of?
Probably just if I could just speak a bit about the extent of our repair operation or our lab operation. We repair up to 800,000 units per year within our, what is now a 22,000 square repair lab, and another 20,000 square foot repair lab being built in California at the moment. And we like to play home games. We like our customers to come and see what we do because we've made the financial investments, the capital investments. And when they come to our facility, they see, wow, that's the same we have in our test lab or we have in our network. And the breadth of technologies that we cover through both telecom and cable networks is what gives us the market position we have. There's a number of different companies can repair your phone, can repair a microwave unit. I don't mean a cooking device. I mean a telecom microwave unit. But just the breadth of everything that we can cover within a repair lab, and everything we sell in terms of our equipment side of the business runs through our lab. So we our testing, so you're getting a high quality product and a warranty product when it gets back to you.
Super, great. Okay, Gordon, if people want to know more about yourself or about Sagent or any of the things we discussed in the podcast today, where would you have me direct them?
Yeah, the best place is simply our website, sagent.net. But in addition to that, we've written a couple of papers recently, both on the green market or the environmental sustainability aspects of our company, as well as the data analytics offering and how robust that can be. So why don't I send you those links, Tom?
Perfect. I'll include them in the show notes so people have access to them. Great.
Very good.
Thanks, Gordon. That's been excellent. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for your time, Tom.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.